All right, welcome to WrestleSpective Radio. We're going to review WrestleMania 26 from on March 28th, 2010 in Phoenix, Arizona. And I'm Jason Mann, and with me is Josh Hatchett. And I guess we'll start with the first match, which was Miz and Big Show against R-Truth and John Morrison for the Unified Tag Titles. And it was really basic, not a whole lot going on in the match. It was really 3-4 minutes. Finish came when John Morrison did a springboard thing and Show punched him in the head and pinned him. Kind of weird to start off with such a short match. Usually they kind of try to do one that gets the crowd hot, although, you know, it was fine. It wasn't like it hurt the crowd, but it didn't do a whole lot to benefit.
Yeah, I think the crowd was excited, but didn't really give them a whole lot to work with. And you could kind of see just from the way they put this together that it seemed like they just kind of slapped it together at the last minute. You know, R-Truth and Morrison never really had a natural fit as a tag team, and basically just teamed them up to give Big Show and Miz an opponent at the last second, and that's kind of how they treated it with a 3-minute match. But you know, it was fine, and you know, fine match for, you know, 3 minutes of what you can do. But you know, not really a huge match, or you know, really a memorable one. With everything else.
Yeah, I mean, it was perfectly acceptable. It was wrestling. It wasn't terrible. They didn't do anything stupid. It was fine. But certainly nothing that will be remembered beyond you know, a day after the show.
At least they kept the titles. That would have been even worse if.
I don't see much. I don't see Truth. I mean, Truth and Morrison fine individually, but as a team, they don't do anything for me.
No.
We're recording this right after Raw the next night, and it looks like they moved on to the Hart Dynasty against Big Show and Miz. Which I think has some possibilities. It looks like the Hard Dynasty, they've got good chemistry, and they've kind of, looks like they could be, I mean, they're a good team to move up the card, so that'd be good.
Yeah, it'd be nice, you know, it's probably been a while since there's been a great tag team feud, so.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be kind of cool if they didn't rush this and, you know, maybe played it out through, you know, a couple pay-per-views and, you know, really had a nice program with the, you know, Brett there for the you know, the support, or, you know, to bring it up when they need a good promo or, you know, something like that, and, you know, really kind of carry this out. That'd be kind of cool, I think.
Yeah, well, one smart thing they've done with the Unified Tag Belts is they've kind of moved them into more of a main event level ever since Jericho and Show won it originally, and, you know, being able to be on both shows. So I think now they're at the point where if they can give a team sort of a rub that kind of elevates them to a higher level than just simply winning the tag titles would have done, you know, a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
So that's definitely a strong thing. Next match was Randy Orton against Cody Rhodes and Ted DiBiase in a triple threat match. The build-up here was kind of puzzling.
Yeah.
They didn't really, just never clicked. And no, the fans wanted to cheer Orton, it seemed, even though, you know, he kind of was the one who had abused Ted and Cody at different points. But every time they had him, you know, do something where, you know, he beat up Dusty, for example, and Cody had to watch, and Cody was, like, angry about it, and they never really followed up on that. And they did stuff with Ted DiBiase Sr. as well, but didn't really follow up on that. And that was, you know, months before. And there was always kind of the thing they were going to pull the trigger and have DiBiase turn babyface when the Marine 2 came out, and they didn't do that. And at this point, it was like they teased the breakup so many times that when it kind of happened, they didn't care. I also think Rhodes and DiBiase have never really shown, like, an individual personality. They've always just kind of been guys. And Cody, a little bit more lately, he kind of has started to. But
they kind of came off as kind of geeky
in
a way, and I don't think that helped the cause. And I think planting the seeds and then stopping and then doing it again. I think they did it so many times that people just kind of got sick of Rhodes and DiBiase. You know, they maybe we're going to get behind them the first time, and then it didn't happen. So there's like, these guys kind of look goofy and, you know, kind of weak and things like that. You know, like they're just, you know, kind of afterthoughts or kind of, so it just kind of hurt that, I think.
Yeah, for as long as this unit was together, they really did not do a very good job of developing personalities. Rhodes and DBS did have the thing with DX where DX did actually put them over in a submission match, and, you know, they did a little bit with them there, but they kind of just, you know, went back. They, you know, after that, they didn't really elevate them, didn't really put them at a new level, and, you know, didn't do well. Now, I say all this, but actually the storyline here in the match did, I think, work pretty well.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just a basic, for most of it was a handicap tag match. A handicap 2-on-1 match, Rhodes and DBS just beating down Orton, kind of to the point where the fans sympathized with Orton, and they were sort of wanting to anyway, and Orton sort of finally acted like a babyface here. And then they argued about who would get the pin, and Orton took advantage and came back and won, and kind of made DiBiase look a little dumb because he was like, because, you know, Orton did his thing where, you know, he's like coiling up and, said, you know, Cody was down in the ring, Ted was outside, and, you know, Orton did the thing where he just like waited forever to do that, and that's fine, but I think he did, went a little too long, and then you could see Ted like sneaking up on him, and finally he did sneak up on, did the $1 Million Dream. And then immediately, like, Randy, you know, did the RKO instead. And it just, it made DBS look kind of like a goof.
Yeah, I would say even a bigger one, but they've kind of, like, kind of at that point where it's not much more damage that they can, you know, do it, you know, to those two at this point. But what was interesting to me, the crowd just kind of said, you know, screw it, we're going to root for Orton. We're done trying to figure out what's going on. We're just going to root for Orton and be hot for him, and that's it. And it seemed like it kind of worked.
I think the way they worked the match helped that. I think, yeah. You know, the you know, with Legacy dominating for, you know, 3/4 of the match, that naturally put the crowd on Orton's side. I think, yeah, that helped too. But I mean, clearly people want to cheer Randy Orton for whatever reason. Randy Orton never really appealed to me as much as some, but he's fine, but he's not my favorite. But I don't really see him as being the best babyface, but, you know, people are into him, and it's a new role for him. He hasn't been a babyface in a long time, and even when he was, it was a very short period of time. So, you know, it certainly could work out for the best. I mean, hopefully they'll move on right away. They didn't really they had nothing with them tonight on Raw, so I'm hopeful they'll move Orton on to bigger and better things and figure out what to do with DiBiase and Rhodes.
I think they have, you know, pretty good amount of time between now and the next pay-per-view, so they can kind of try to figure out what they're going to do with him. I think the big thing for him to become a good babyface is to kind of get rid of some of that, angry, slow-motion movement stuff that he does. That, I mean, some of it's good that gets the crowd into it, but some of it's just kind of heel-esque, I guess, in a sense. And I think, you know, he needs to kind of get out of some of that, you know, just to, for people to really be into him as a face.
I agree with that, but at the same time, I don't think, I mean, he can't just be like, come like a super bouncing baby face. I think his edge is important to, you know, to get people behind him. I mean, there was a point, the Royal Rumble 2009, right, you know, at the point, I think it was after he kicked Vince in the head and punted him in the head before they had gotten really involved with Hunter, where it felt like he could have been a really strong babyface and a really, like, you know, big thing. People are really behind him now. They're not as into him at this moment, but, you know, they're still pretty into him. It still could work out and be a big thing. We'll just have to see. I do wonder, you know, who he's going to face as a babyface. You know, I do think there might be something with, you know, maybe they could move him to SmackDown, have him work with Punk and Jericho, who are, you know, fairly fresh opponents for him.
Yeah, I was going to say, with the draft, you can maybe you know, switch some stuff around. It seems like he's been on Raw for a while.
Yeah. So. I mean, I don't think anyone or not a lot of people want to see any combination of Orton, Triple H, and Cena at this point. And all three are babyfaces right now anyway. So, you know, you could do something, but, you know, you're not going to have a, you know, long-term feud necessarily. So, yeah, we'll have to see where it goes. But as far as the match, you know, was nothing particularly special, but the storyline, I think, worked, and, you know, it was certainly fine.
Yeah, I agree.
Next was Money in the Bank match, which there were 10 guys: Kofi Kingston, Shelton Benjamin, Drew McIntyre, Matt Hardy, Dolph Ziggler, Kane, Jack Swagger, Christian, Evan Bourne, and MVP.
That's a lot of people.
That was 10, yeah. And, you know, it didn't seem like it was, like, I mean, on one hand, there wasn't, like, a whole bunch of spots where, like, you know, it felt like there were too many guys in the ring, like, you know, like if you have, like, a, you know, battle royal with too many guys, for example. I mean, clearly, you know, usually, you know, the way this is set up, guys get knocked out, guys are on the floor. You know, you can have two or three or four guys in the ring at once, and, you know, you can... Yeah, it worked out fine as far as that goes. I think there were a few things where guys kind of, you know, like, I don't remember every single guy doing something in this match.
Yeah, I agree. I think the reason that 10 didn't seem like too many is probably about 5 of them really weren't really involved in the match at all.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe they did one spot or something. But
I mean, I don't even remember MVP and... Dolph Ziggler and Shelton Benjamin, you know, doing anything.
Yeah, I'm you know, really. Dolph did take one pretty big.
Dolph did. I don't remember MVP or Shelton hardly at all.
Yeah, I don't really remember. Matt took some pretty big bumps. Evan Bourne did a shooting star press on like a ladder bridge. Christian did like a reverse DDT off the ladder. McIntyre was highlighted a bit. They did a big crotch spot with him. That was off pretty high.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I mean, they did some... I mean, they did some decent stuff. I mean, you know, it's hard to compare because kind of all the Money in the Bank matches kind of run together a little bit for me.
Yeah.
You know, but it was entertaining. The guys seemed like they worked pretty safe. I mean, you know, obviously any ladder match, they're going to do hard stuff. It's going to be tough. But, you know, for the most part, it seemed pretty safe, yet it didn't, like, feel to me like, you know, I was being cheated out of, you know, anything or, you know, anything like that. I mean, I think it worked just fine. The crowd was into it. Didn't overstay its welcome. I guess the one funny thing in the end was when Swagger, there was kind of a cool thing where he and Christian were on top, then he smashed the briefcase into Christian's face, and Christian took a big bump off the ladder, and then he was up top there, and it took him forever to get the briefcase. I mean, I would say 30 seconds or, you know, maybe even 45 seconds. It probably just seemed longer. And, you know, no one... You know, everyone was outside the ring. You know, there would have naturally have been an opportunity for somebody to, you know, maybe come up or, you know, but that would have required, you know, the kind of improvisation that would have been difficult. And, you know, other than that, no complaints.
I think this is always a good match for WrestleMania. It's just a nice excitement type match where you don't have to worry about building up a title or really building up a huge story for this. You just throw some talented guys together and throw in an entertaining match for people. And the two things that I liked about this, one was Evan Bourne. You know, I was kind of worried that he, you know, maybe lost in the shuffle, but he, you know, he got some good play in this and actually, you know, came off pretty well, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
And two was, you know, I guess last year with Punk winning, it was kind of anticlimactic with just the finish, you know, just him climbing up and grabbing it. And I did like the finish with Swagger knocking Christian off with the briefcase. I slammed him in the head. I thought that was a pretty cool spot to end it. So I think that was pretty neat how it ended.
Yeah.
And certainly nobody, I don't think many people thought Swagger was going to win.
Yeah. I mean, especially having Christian up there, who was one of the favorites, you know, to have Swagger not Christian down, you know, that was sort of the opposite of what you would have thought. So,
yeah.
One spot I did forget to mention was Kofi Kingston trying to use the ladder as stilts, which
sort of
weird. Maybe there's some stipulation where if you can make it across the ring using ladder as stilts, you win the match automatically. That's my only guess.
It reminded me of RoboCop, just the way he moved.
Okay, yeah, a little bit. Yes,
looked like the RoboCop animation stuff.
Yeah, I don't know really what he was thinking on that, but you know, it's Kofi Kingston. What do you do? He can be a little silly sometimes.
Yes.
So they did. Then they did the Hall of Fame stuff, and everyone came around. Ted DiBiase got the main reaction, and I noticed, that several times Wendy Richter did Girls Just Want to Have Fun.
We got the point at the end of
that. Yeah, apparently girls just want to have fun. That's something we've learned, so that's good. And, 97-year-old former Gorgeous George wife was out there, too, with their walker, and Mad Dog Vachon got wheeled out. It's always a nice thing.
Yeah, it came off pretty well.
Yeah. So the next match was Triple H versus Sheamus, and the match was solid. It was fine. Wasn't close to a classic or anything, but it was good enough. Triple H did kick out of two bicycle kicks, and then kind of played possum at the end, and then hit Sheamus with a quick pedigree. Kind of the whole thing was, I guess the idea was that Sheamus did control most of the match, and then Triple H was kind of the crafty veteran to pull it out in the end.
Yeah.
And I think this would have been an opportunity to put over Sheamus strong to give him, the win would have meant a lot more for him than it meant for Hunter. I guess they may be going with Hunter and Cena next, so I guess.
I hope not.
Yeah, Hunter and Cena have not wrestled nearly as many times as it seems they have. I mean, they've actually only wrestled like probably six or seven times
in
4 or 5 years. Yeah, that is worse, exactly. It seems like, I mean, there have been tag matches, maybe some three-way matches, but as far as like actual singles matches, they actually have wrestled, I would say, 6 or 7 matches in 5 years. Obviously, that's not a tremendous number, but maybe there are others I'm not thinking of. But I think they've done 4 pay-per-view matches and then a couple of TV matches. But
the way Raw ended with Sheamus, sneaking up on Hunter and hitting him with the pipe, hopefully they continue that a little bit more. And For me, I think that's a better feud than Triple H just going to Cena out of this. Hopefully they continue that. But, the match was fine. They built it up, like you wrote about, that even if Sheamus loses, it's not going to end his career like they made it out to be.
Right. That was kind of the hype where, this means everything to Sheamus, and then he loses, and then they're not really going to address that at all, which,
I mean, it's his first WrestleMania, and he's wrestling Triple H, so, no matter what happens, I think it's like...
Yes,
he's doing pretty well for himself.
No one believed that a guy who just had a WWE title reign is suddenly going to disappear, but but yes, I think the wrong guy went over, but in the end, it's probably not a huge deal. If they continue the feud, they can put him over later, or they can, apparently he can, feel like, he gets the rub by working with Triple H. Next match was CM Punk and Rey Mysterio, which I thought was really, really good. Everything they did, the pace was great. There were cool reversals. Mm-hmm. It was lots of fun, but it only went 7 or 8 minutes, and I really think that it really should have gone longer.
Twice as long.
Yeah. That could have. I mean, if they had done that, type of match, it would have blown the roof off, and it was disappointing that they didn't get that time. But certainly, what was very good the time they gave it.
Yeah, I don't think they obviously in 6 or 7 minutes, they can't get the straight edge society to really interact. I mean, they played into the finish, but it just seemed kind of rushed that they jumped on the apron and kind of, you know, ended up like that. But yeah, I think they could have, you know, especially if it was kind of a dark horse feud and it had been set up really, really well. And then it just kind of, you know, got a handful of minutes and it was done. So, you know, that was kind of disappointing, but
yeah,
you know,
he did a good promo beforehand, I thought.
Yeah.
Also his G.I. Joe tights were pretty awesome.
Yes,
they were
class.
Yeah, they were Mysterio's avatar costume did not impress me completely. The fake ponytail, that did not do much for me. Yeah, the finish here was basically Rey went for the 619, but Serena got up there to prevent it. And then Gallows went for the distraction, and then Punk went for the GTS, but then Mysterio reversed it into a Hurricanrana, which basically Punk went into Gallows and then set up the 619 and did the splash. And I could have sworn he was going to kick out because it had been nothing, because it had been no time, and then he ended up being the pin. But,
and I was like, oh, that's over.
Yeah, I mean, they're clearly going to do more, I imagine. I mean, it's going to continue. So, there's been talk about Mask versus Hair, which I still think would need a couple months build, probably. I mean, they could do, you know, they could add Extreme Rules. They could have Punk win, and then, you know, they're even 1-1, and then they can, you know, do the Hair thing. I guess Punk would have to probably do something to Rey to make him want to put up his mask, or they could do, you know, something with his family. Or I read in the Observer how they had some cool ideas for that they ended up rejecting, that Punk had. Like, Punk was going to, like play games, video games with Rey's kids, and do a thing where he turned his kids against Rey, like a brainwashing cult thing. Or I think there was also talk of maybe shaving one of the kids' heads or something like that. Yeah. Which I don't know. I think some of that, I mean, it depends how it's done, but I think some of those ideas were interesting. Apparently they were rejected, so maybe they won't be incorporated. But we'll see. I feel like they could still have a good feud and have some good matches in their future. But it'd been nice to have a great match on this kind of stage. Again, you know, there were a few other matches that feel like they were shortchanged on time. Mm-hmm. It's hard to know where to cut. But I guess the next match maybe could have been an opportunity to cut a little time.
Yeah, you could have cut that. You could have even maybe went without, one of these matches. I mean, I don't know that you needed the tag match on here with the way it was kind of
coming
together.
I agree.
Maybe make the women's match a little shorter.
It was pretty short. I mean, they couldn't have done much less, but with introductions and everything, it still took time. But the next match anyway is Vince McMahon and Bret Hart, and it was just kind of a weird, I guess psychology was kind of more the issue. Basically, what happened was Bret comes in first, and then Vince comes out second. And then he does a promo saying that that he got all the Harts together and bought them out, and then screwed. And then now they're all gonna give Bret Hart a big screwing. I believe were the exact words.
WrestleMania size screwing.
WrestleMania size screwing. Yes, thank you.
Which nobody wanted to see.
Yeah, nobody wanted to see that. And then pretty much immediately, Bret reveals that that they had talked about it, and that now they basically turned heel and turned babyface all within like a minute, and the crowd didn't really know what to make of that. I don't think Bret did the best job of getting the point across either. But
it was weird, just like one swerve and then another one right after it.
Right.
It looked like the same thing. And it just didn't seem to flow real well, I guess.
Yeah. It's hard to, I mean, it might be hard to communicate just in promos to 70,000 people anyway.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's, some sound issues there. So the crowd didn't really get it. They fought for a bit. Bret dominated, then he threw Vince out, then the Harts all beat up Vince. They did a heart attack clothesline to the floor, with TJ coming off the top of the post. Vince landed pretty bad on his head on that. And then they threw him back in the ring. Bret kicked
you know, worked him over, just, you know, basically punching him, destroying him. Teased a sharpshooter, then he, you know, beat him up some more. It was basically just 10 minutes of Bret and the Hearts beating up Vince. And they went, eventually Vince did get tossed out again. He went under the ring, got a crowbar, which kind of scared off the Hearts, but he was pretty much immediately cut off by Bret. And then Bret got a chair and just wailed on Vince I mean, it felt that they said in commentary 13 chair shots for 13 years, but I'm not. It seemed like it was more than that. Maybe it was like a sequence of 13, and then there were a few more later. But anyway, eventually it did end with a sharpshooter, and the finish got a good reaction. And you know, once he started wailing on him with the chair. They got a good reaction. I think they could have done just like 5 chair shots or kind of basically told the same story. I don't think he needed all those. I bet Vince was pretty sore after that was done.
Do you think Brett kind of gave a little more on those chair shots, just a little bit for some satisfaction?
I don't know.
Maybe for a couple?
Maybe. I don't know. I think they're kind of past that at this point. But, you know. Who knows? I will say, I mean, it was nice, at least Brett, to have a big moment at WrestleMania to cap off his career.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was sort of like a big emotional thing at the start of this. I mean, obviously, just the whole real background of Montreal was just such a, you know, there was such potential there for such like a, you know, really good like reality-based storyline, and they kind of went off the rails on that. Although, I mean, the reveal for Brett, actually, you know, when he took off the cast, I mean, that was really good. And I think I don't know, I'm not sure if that overall helped or hurt or whatever. But
well, I don't think that, you know, in the end, I don't think it had a huge impact. I just think this, for whatever reason, it just didn't click. It just didn't. You know, I don't know if it was we all had something in our imaginations that we hoped it would live up to, and where it's, you know, 1998 Bret Hart putting McMahon in a sharpshooter and just, you know, running wild on him, you know, or this, you know, this just didn't, you know, it was almost sympathetic, you know, I felt sympathetic towards Bret for most of this, and then Vince is getting destroyed and you kind of feel sorry for him a little bit, and then, you know, Vince just never, or Bret just never looked like Bret Hart, really, I guess, in all this, where, you know, I guess he'd been off TV for so long, and then he comes back, and it just didn't look like Bret Hart, and I don't know. I'm not sure really what it was, but this never quite worked the way I kind of hoped or wished, or maybe it was just a pipe dream, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, there were moments it worked really well. And obviously, you know, we're saying this understanding that Bret, you know, had a lot of concussions and a stroke. And, you know, it's incredible the comeback that he's made. And, you know, both of us being big Bret Hart fans, we're just, you know, happy that he's doing well and that, you know, there's some closure here. And I think there were moments where Bret performed really well and they were really good during the feud. But yeah, I would say overall it was a disappointment, and I didn't feel like any emotional satisfaction at the end after Bret had beaten Vince, and you know,
I agree.
And that was, I guess, the most disappointing thing of all. More than how they physically looked. I mean, you knew that they it wasn't going to be. I mean, even though you wanted it to be, you knew that wasn't possible. Apparently, you know, there's, you know, Bret may not have been able to take. I mean, he took 0 bumps. He did basically took no punishment at all. I mean, I guess at the beginning he may have, you know, taken a punch or two, but I mean, you know, there was basically, he was no jeopardy at all, you know, nothing. And it's hard to have anything exciting, you know, unless you just really, really want to see Vince McMahon get beat up for.
Well, we've seen that.
And if they'd done it for like 5 minutes instead of 10, I think that would have been better. I think that just extending it for so long, like I get the storyline, you know, there are, I get where Vince or Bret just want to make Vince suffer, and I get where that makes sense, but it was too much.
Yeah, I think if you wanted, somehow if you wanted to make him suffer, you would do it like in a weekly thing where you do something each week where he'd suffer and suffer, and finally you'd give him the ultimate suffering for 5 minutes at WrestleMania and that'd be over. This seemed like it was just too much for one time.
Yeah, so, one sitting. I agree with that. But next show was, or next match rather, was Chris Jericho and Edge for the world title. And a surprise finish here. Jericho basically winning clean with the code breaker. I mean, he'd used the belt. He'd had a belt shot right before it, but there was still there was some delay between that and the code breaker. It was a surprise, and I thought this was actually was a really good match. I would say it was the second best match on the show for me.
I agree.
It got probably got about 15 minutes. I think roughly. So it was a little shorter than it still could have been. It started off a little slow. It took a little bit for the crowd to get into it. Maybe just kind of off the last match. Yeah. They had some really cool just countering of each other's stuff. Mm-hmm. Like one thing where Jericho did tried to do a spear and then Edge got a really good kick. They kind of did some reversals and they kind of worked. Jericho worked kind of attacking Edge's Achilles heel, which which Matt Stryker
he made sure we understood that
he jammed that down our throat pretty much.
Yeah, I thought it was you talked about that. I thought Jericho stopped Edge's spear a couple times with some cool moves. I just thought for Edge being out for as long as he had, and these two not really working together, leading up to this, they had done just some run-ins and some confrontation and stuff like that, but not really a match.
I thought
the timing was incredible.
It was good. I mean, Edge looked good. I mean, I think he's done a few dark matches, but I mean, nothing. Stuff where it was just 4 or 5 minutes, and they weren't doing a whole lot. So I thought it looked really good. Nothing was, everything was crisp and smooth. It was really good. I liked when Jericho worked, the Walls of Jericho and then did a half crab to work over the Achilles. Yeah. And that was really good. They just broke out some stuff, and like I said, it's another match. I'm sure that it will continue, and I'm pretty excited about that. Although I sort of thought that maybe it would be good to revisit this feud in a couple months. Maybe Jericho can, since Edge failed to win the title, maybe Jericho could work with The Undertaker, kind of get one more match out of him before he takes his summer hiatus or whatever.
Yeah.
And kind of have Edge kind of move him to the bottom of the card. Post-match, I haven't mentioned yet, is that Edge basically gets mad, and then he clears off the announcer's table, puts Jericho up on the top, and then kind of just does it a running spear and put him through the barricade.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
That was pretty exciting.
I mean, it doing that, Edge certainly isn't buried, by the loss. So I think that
Crowd reaction is a little different here. I mean, they kind of went back and forth a little bit. Edge kind of got sympathy once he was working over the Achilles, and then after he snapped at the end, he kind of got some heat, which sort of makes sense. I mean, basically, he lost cleanly, and now is being a sort of loser. But in the larger scheme, I think it works. And I think the finish here, you could make a bigger thing of it if he gets a suspension, or like I said, doesn't get a title rematch Taylor Long, puts over shock and danger, and you could have really hurt him. You can't do that stuff like that, which I think gets that kind of thing over more rather than just being thing you'll forget right away.
Yeah, I agree. That'd be a good idea. Just to, his punishment, it was punishment enough to lose, and now because of his actions, he has to. It's going to take that much longer for him to get another chance at Jericho. And obviously, Jericho would be great at rubbing that in and then revisiting that later.
So. Yeah. And I think the other thing is that idea kind of builds him up. He's always been the guy who takes the shortcut. And it's nice for him to be the guy, for actually have to earn his way for once in kind of a good babyface storyline.
Yeah.
So,
Next match was the 10-man women's tag, and Vicky Guerrero was on the heel side, and she looked like she was having a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think she enjoyed it.
Yeah, she did some of the Eddie.
She might have been the only one.
Yeah, yes, she did some of like the Eddie mannerisms, like the the shaking and stuff, and you know, it's nice for her to be able to pay tribute to her husband. I mean, you know, who thought 4 years later that she would be involved and be a major character? And it's been, you know, really good in her role.
Yeah, I think that was good for her, like you said, you know, especially some of the weird ways that they've kind of treated her, and, you know, the whole, you know, pig stuff and things like that. It's kind of nice to have her, you know,
have a moment. Yeah, I mean, she was a heel, but it was kind of a feel good moment in a sense. Just all the stuff making fun of her weight and stuff. The really tasteless stuff. So the finish here was Vicky. Basically, a couple of the other heels helped her balance on the top rope. She jumped off the top rope and pinned Kelly, though she actually pulled her so far for the pin that Kelly's shoulders went up. The ref stopped, and then she kind of like did like a couple like little like body presses, and on top of her, and then got the actual pinfall. Yeah. So, you know, short. It really, you know, nothing offended me about it. It was fine.
Yeah, it was fine.
Yeah.
I've seen plenty worse women's
matches. Sure. You know, and it's fun for them to be on WrestleMania, and it's not like, you know, I didn't have a problem with it.
Yeah.
John Cena and Batista, which I think some people really liked this match a lot. I thought it was good. I thought there was good drama, you know, kicking out of each other's big moves, and you know, did some good near falls. There was a lot of stuff that was sloppy, though.
Yeah.
They did the spot again where Cena came off the top, but then Batista tried to do the Batista bomb. It looked good. It was the finish for their SummerSlam match, SummerSlam 08, I guess. And it looked pretty good there, but it did not look good here. Yeah. You know.
I thought just as this match was starting to get good and they're really starting to work hard and, you know, get some heat and some psychology, that then it ended.
Yeah.
I think, this is another case where, that you wish they maybe had just a few more minutes, because it seemed like they were finally hitting the good groove and then it was over, you know, so.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I thought the match really lacked a clear storyline to me.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the whole thing was that, you know, Batista dominated the whole thing, and it was kind of like, you know, it was getting to be like a really big brawl, or, you know, like a really big, like, you know, feud. And then they come in, they do like a lockup spot. It reminded me a little bit of Orton and Triple H last year, where they just kind of like, that was just a huge thing, and then they're doing wrestling moves. And it's sort of like, you know, these guys are supposed to really hate each other, it's supposed to be like a really passionate feud, and, you know, they're just doing moves. And, you know, by the end, it was pretty good. You know, but it just, I mean, the crowd was certainly more into it than Hunter and Orton last year. Of course, they didn't have to follow nearly the level of match, so that was part of it. But I still thought, like, it lacked a really good story. It was fine, and in the end with Cena, you know, locking in the STF and Batista tapping and, you know, kind of, you know, being a wuss by doing that after, you know, he had talked big. I mean, that was pretty good. The end was pretty funny when, after he won the title, he went out and he went and stood by the I Hate Cena fans who were all going crazy next to him.
And he even got a good laugh and smile. That was a pretty genuine moment. That was pretty funny.
That was fun. You know, Cena gets a lot of hate, and I think he, you know, there are legit criticisms of some of his stuff, but he's also very good in a lot of ways. He's had a lot of great matches, so, you know, I think he's just fine.
Yeah, you can't say he doesn't. You can't say he mails it in, because he definitely works hard. Whether he's your type of wrestler or whatever, you can't say that he's you know, going light or anything like that, because he works pretty hard pretty much every match he does. So
yeah,
but you know, I agree with you that the build up was so good for this match that the payoff wasn't quite what you had hoped for.
Yeah.
With just the style of match they did and just kind of how it came across. The finish was good. I did like the tap by Batista was just like a meek little tap where I thought that, you know, just a little thing like that, like his weak little tap where he's just, you know, he wasn't like slamming the ground tapping out, but he just, you know, tapped out real lightly.
Yeah, like he's trying to hide it, you know, like he's ashamed of it or something. So it was a good match. It was it was fun. I it wasn't great, but it was very good, and it worked out pretty good in the end.
Well, I think the way they good for WWE on its part, the way the order of matches worked out perfectly, where you had a strong match with Edge and Jericho, and you know got you know great, you know, best match up to that point, and then they have the women's match, and then they have this, which would have been a mistake to have this match go on last, but in its place it came off pretty well and kind of built
as a semi-main. It was good, definitely. So the last match was the incredible Shawn Michaels Undertaker match, I think it was better than last year's match. I really do. I think it told a better story. I think the psychology was stronger with the certain things like working on the holds, like Michaels working on Undertaker's knee. That was a good story, I thought. Trying to work some of the submissions, trying to like find different ways that he normally doesn't to try to beat Taker. I thought a number of botched spots last year that people kind of glossed over, and I did. This had one minor thing that was a little sloppy.
The reversal, Shawn's reversal of Undertaker's submission move was pretty sweet.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Right.
I enjoyed that, but I'd probably. It's hard for me to compare them, because last year you knew they'd have a good match, but you kind of really weren't expecting that good of a match, and just kind of how it was placed, it seemed like the atmosphere and everything like that, the crowd wasn't quite ready to realize how great this match was, whereas this year it went on last, and it seemed like a hot crowd, and the atmosphere was... okay, this is the one we've been waiting for. You know, last year was awesome, so we know this is going to be awesome. So
yeah, but
that kind of helped too.
The other thing is, I mean, the expectations they had to live down this year. I mean, you know, how many matches do you have high expectations for, and then they end up disappointing you? Yeah. I mean, this, you know, even if you don't think it was quite as good, it certainly wasn't a disappointment at all.
Oh, not at all. I can see that where it at every bit lived up to lot, you know, match last year's, and I guess in that sense, you know, maybe it was better that they match it, because my expectation was there's no way with their injuries and a year later, a year older, you know, everyone, you know, how can they possibly live up to it? And I didn't think there was any way that they could. I thought some sort of, you know, something else, you know, people running in and things like that, but they did it on their own. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, there were a lot of good spots, but one in particular, I mean, obviously doing the moonsault off the top rope with Taker with him on the announcer's table, just wow. I mean, he had to go so far to do that. I didn't think he'd make it. I mean, you know, Shawn Michaels is obviously an athletic guy, but you know, at 44 years old, to pull something off like that, he had to go far, and it worked really. I mean, it was great.
Yeah, I mean, moonsault's mostly meant for height.
He got
distance.
Yeah, he really did. It's like he had practiced that or something. I don't know, but I mean, I can't believe he pulled that off, to be honest.
Yeah.
So the finish came with Undertaker did a tombstone, which Michaels kicked out, and they did a lot of the finishes kicking out this year, which you know they had done last year as well. And they kind of, you know, Taker at that point kind of wasn't sure what to do and kind of wanted to have like a little bit of mercy on Shawn after, you know, they'd done all this stuff. But Michaels, you know, he did the Undertaker's throat gesture, and then he slapped Taker in the face and just, you know, pissed him off, and he then grabbed him, put him in the tombstone position, but then jumped this time.
That was
and
sweet.
Just did it for emphasis, and just, you know, and that was it. It was 1, 2, 3, and it was just incredible emotion. You know, people obviously were celebrating Taker's win, and then, you know, as soon as that was done, you know, Undertaker picked Shawn up and shook his hand, and, you know, and then left the ring, and then Shawn's in the middle, and then, you know, the crowd's standing, and, you know, they're all applauding. Many of them are bowing at him. I mean, yeah. You know, he's tearing up, and, you know, even the announcers are all clapping, and just everyone, you know, and the announcers are silent, thankfully, because they did not do a particularly strong job. It was Michael Cole, Jerry Lawler, and Matt Stryker, and, you know, Jim Ross was missed.
If he would have called this match, just imagine. I mean, that would have been, I mean, as good as this was, I mean, just imagine with him calling that.
Yeah, that certainly would have added dimension, but, you know, it was incredible.
Yeah.
And, you know, people were just, yeah, I mean, people were going crazy, and it was just such a great emotional moment. I think, you know, other than Randy Savage and Elizabeth reuniting at WrestleMania 7, I think it was the most emotional moment in WrestleMania history. I mean, I think it even beat Flair a couple years ago. I don't know. I mean, I'd have to watch that again. It's been a while since I watched that, but I think it was right up there. And as far as matches in WrestleMania, I think it's, you know, top 5. Certainly top 10. I think it's, along with maybe Rock and Austin at WrestleMania 17, I would say it's the, you know, best last match in WrestleMania, best final match in WrestleMania history. Just, you know, everything about it was perfect, or perfect or close to perfect. It's just really good. And then, you know, tonight they had a big send-off for Shawn. He was able to give, like, a really good speech at the end, and people were, you know, yelling thank you, Shawn, and, you know, it was just a really nicely done. You know, they didn't overdo anything.
Didn't bring everybody out either.
No, which, you know,
might
have been nice, but, you know, it was kind of I didn't want them to do the exact same thing they did for Flair either.
Yeah.
So I thought this was a nice thing. You know, he said something really nice, you know, said nice things about Brett. Brett had also, you know, in his earlier promo, you know, congratulated Shawn and, you know, complimented him. It's nice that they seem to actually be genuinely friendly with each other.
Yeah.
And willing to put, you know, the past issues behind, which is nice. You know?
I think the way they did it was fine. I mean, if they came out and at the end Brett came out and they hugged and stuff like that, you might have wondered, you know, is that fake or anything like that? So obviously they're not going to be best friends. They're not going to be flying to each other's houses and, you know, hanging out and stuff like that.
Probably not, no.
But the respect that they showed seemed genuine, and the way they did it was right. So,
yeah, and it was, you know, other than that match, I mean, there wasn't really any other great matches. I mean, I would say that Cena, Batista, Edge and Jericho, and the Money in the Bank were all good to very good level. Nothing else really stood out, but there was nothing terrible. I mean, there was nothing bad on the show. I guess Brett and Vince, depending on your point of view.
Yeah.
You know, it certainly wasn't, like, well executed. I mean, I think there may be some people. I think I may be defending it a little bit more than you know, I'm sure your average, like, you know, young fan that didn't grow up during, you know, that wasn't around during the you know, Monday Night Wars and during the whole Montreal situation may not be as willing to defend it as we are, but, you know, I think everything was really, really good other than that. And even that, you know, I think had a couple nice moments. So, you know, thumbs up show, definitely.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I think this is a kind of an example where if you have an incredible main event, then not to say that nothing else doesn't matter, but if you have an incredible main event, you get a thumbs up show.
Yeah, people are going to remember the show, you know.
Yeah.
You know, people remember WrestleMania 6 for Hogan Warrior, and there was nothing on that show that was anything any good. I mean, You know, there are four or five matches that were better than, you know, the other matches, any of the other matches in that show, but here. But yeah, you know, exactly. A main event will make you people remember remember the show very good, or, you know, just an incredible match like, you know, Austin, Bret Hart at WrestleMania 13 or something like that. So, yeah.
This in every way lived up to the hype and the moment and everything. I mean, that's wrestling these days, that doesn't happen very often, and for them to do it 2 years in a row is pretty amazing.
Yeah, I think people are going to remember this. This is going to sink in. You know, these are obviously two of the guys that, you know, both of us grew up, you know, watching ever since we were kids. I mean, you know, they've been around forever. There aren't a lot of guys who, you know, have that, who, you know, can do this. You know, I hope that, you know, the next generation of wrestlers that are, you know, in 10 years, I hope that, you know, I can see, you know, the two guys that are popping up in my head, even though we've seen them wrestle a million times, are John Cena and Randy Orton. Hopefully, you know, maybe they'll be the type of guys who in their mid-40s can still, you know, put together a match with that level of, you know, intensity and emotion. And, you know, we'll have to see. We'll see if there's a, you know, if there's any wrestlers who are able to do that, you know, 10, 15 years from now. I'm not entirely optimistic, but you never know.
Yeah, I think in this era where they everything that, well, not everything, but a lot of things that WWE tries to force on you as being genuine and noteworthy and the greatest ever and the best ever, I think this kind of did it all on its own, and it kind of lived up to it and was truthfully, you know, genuine and great. And I think that's why it'll, you know, stand the test of time, or, you know, keep, you know, it'll just be a classic for years and years. So
absolutely. All right, well, I guess that's about it. You can find us online at wrestlespective.blogspot.com. We've got lots of reviews of matches, of past angles, lots of interesting lists, and you know, fun content that I'm sure you'll spend hours enjoying. And you can also send us an email at wrestlespective@gmail.com, and we'd be glad to answer questions, or if you have any requests on things you'd like us to write about or us to talk about on any of our radio shows, we'd be glad to do it. We're excited. We've been going for just about a month now, and, you know, had a lot of you know, good feedback, and really you know, enjoying doing this. So hopefully it'll continue, and hopefully people will stay really interested in it. So
yeah, it'll be exciting.
All right. Thanks a lot, and have a great night.